This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The money fight has been cashed in. We'll see who got the best returns. John Jones, potential USADA violation. Could it turn the sport on its head? We'll discuss. Also, two hosts with good hair and one guest with great hair. Elias Theodorou joins us in studio for the duration of the TSN MMA show today. Joe, you have a good weekend. You're out in Chicago calling Glory.
Yeah, it was awesome. I just got to call that Glory card in Chicago, came back, got to catch that Mayweather fight. But first of all, I'm hoping I'm the one with the great hair. I'm wondering first. No, I can't get past
Elias,
that.
When Elias is around, we have our problems. I've got good hair, too. You know, we both go to barbers that cut our hair for over an hour. They work very hard. But I showed them a picture of Elias. I'm sorry. I just can't help you here.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so I was in Vegas for the fight. You were in Boston. Boston Pizza, to be clear. Pizza in Toronto, watching with a lot of different fans. What was the atmosphere like at a restaurant? That I haven't heard from anybody just yet.
No, it was tremendous. Again, the way that structure is, you actually pay... Well, Boston Pizza pays for the capacity. So once they hit capacity, which they did, they no longer let people in. And it was amazing to see about 200, 300 people outside of Boston Pizza watching through the windows. Even some people had lawn chairs and were just having a good time.
So this was the big one downtown, right?
Yeah. John and Finch.
How many people does that hold?
I want to say about 400, 500 people.
So the price to show Pacquiao and Mayweather for a 500 capacity restaurant was $15,500. So that's why they charge per head.
Yep.
But imagine how much it must have cost for this fight. It's probably even higher.
Yeah, it was $25 at the door, which was reasonable, especially some of the other places around there were charging as much as $40 a head. So, again, and then that's what the whole atmosphere is, and that's what, again, everyone being there in one room and that moment where someone, in the end, where McGregor actually loses, it's that atmosphere that we brought in.
Was the crowd mostly McGregor?
Yeah, no. And just like the press conference, I think mixed martial arts is, or Toronto rather, is a mixed martial arts town.
Mm-hmm. Did you find a lot of experts there? Oh, there's a lot of, everyone knows everything at those kind of places.
Just like when I did the Ultimate Fighter tryouts, the occasional ninja comes out of there.
Oh, yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Everyone's an expert.
Do you get any questions about why he wasn't throwing kicks or anything along those lines?
No, but everyone was, there was actually some bookies taking bets, not in Boston Pizza, but bookies taking bets whether he does a DQ, and I don't know what the over-under was on that. But
yeah, there were lots of weird props, lots of interesting ones.
Yep. Well,
what
again,
was his penalty?
It's a wild card.
I heard it was like $10 million an illegal strike.
That's
or something
what Brendan
like
Schaub
that?
Said, yeah. On Joe Rogan's podcast, Schaub said that it was $10 million if he were to throw a kick or get disqualified by kick.
I think that would be worth it. I honestly think it would have been worth it.
Yeah,
towards the end.
If you throw
a lot of illegal strikes
and
knock
him out, and he's like, see what I told you. I can beat him if it was a real man's fight.
Yeah. Come out afterwards and say that, although he'd probably get sued also. He probably wouldn't
true.
Walk away with anything.
True, the suing aspect. And I think, again, just like when we talked, or when you talked about the entry of this podcast about John Jones and whatnot, same thing with the contract with him versus DC, if there was any cheating, because that kind of nullifies the actual contract itself, that's now assault. So that's that kind of happens.
Is that part of the contract?
I don't know if it was specific for this one, but I'm talking about DC versus Jones.
Yeah, that's
I know
what I mean.
That was definitely in there, and I think it's like $500,000 fine, potentially, and then
Cormier,
$500,000 fine, and open to assault charges essentially.
Wow. Well, let's get to that a little bit later on. Let's talk about the money fight. Obviously, it's in the books. It was a crazy lead up. It's nice to get back to the UFC and their upcoming events now, but what were your thoughts, Joe, from a technical standpoint, early on in the fight? How did you think Conor was doing in those rounds where he was having some success?
Well, he looked good in the beginning, and I think that's where everyone got all excited. It's kind of what I expected, to be honest with you. If I'm Floyd Mayweather, I'm not going to go out aggressively. He's not sure what kind of style Conor's going to bring. He's hearing all this controversy about him switching stances, him being in different stances. So the intelligent Floyd, I think, fought the right fight. And to give up a few rounds in the beginning is smart to do. He's got to figure it out, figure out his timing, see his distance. And yes, when Floyd came out and said, Conor came out and said, I made you fight like a Mexican. But that's his style. That's his plan. He's so strategic and he has the ability to adapt. And he showed it. So I think it was the fight I expected. Can Conor box is the question. Well, he did well. Better than I expected, to be honest with you.
An 0-0 boxer won a round against Floyd Mayweather.
Better than I expected.
When you really look at it from that angle and put it into that perspective, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And 50 times the experience in boxing is technically what it is. And even if you factor in how many fights Connor's had in mixed martial arts, it's still twice as many. And obviously, Floyd, being the master strategist, he had a long game. And that long game was in the deep rounds. And Connor, who was the first to say it, he gets a little wobbly in moments like that. Hindsight's 20/20. There's a lot of parallels in regards to the second Diaz fight. And again, Floyd Mayweather showed why he's the best, not only defensive boxer of all time, arguably the best boxer in our generation.
Well, one thing that you and Connor share is an agent, Adi Attar from
yes.
Paradigm. Have you spoken to Adi at all since the fight?
Not yet. No, he's still. I think he's still recouping from just
he's
not
off
only
the grid.
Yes, off the grid. Not only the actual build up to the fight, but probably the after party as well.
Yeah, the heavyweight champ is also kickboxing. Rico Verhoeven's with you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
What do you think is next for Connor? Do you think he's in terms of an opponent? I think it's pretty safe to say his next fight is going to be in the octagon. Would you guys both agree with that?
I would say so.
Yes.
So if that's the case, what do you think would be next from opponent-wise? A lot of people have been hinting at the Diaz trilogy.
It makes total sense. I think Diaz is kind of, one, the trilogy aspect. There's the bad blood. He's already mentioned it. Obviously, there's Khabib. But with him, it's more the issue of, is he healthy? Is he able to make weight? Mm-hmm. We've all heard reports that, because I've met him. He's huge for a 155-er. He looks like a 170-er, no problem. So,
yeah, but so
the
is
fact,
Michael Chiesa, so is Kevin Lee. Like, these guys weigh 200 pounds.
But I wouldn't say 200 pounds, but Khabib is one of those that is, again, how many fights he's had, how much damage his body's taken, and the fact if your kidneys and your liver is shutting right. down, no matter how much you want to do it, you just can't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think it has to be that fight, but does Nate deserve the fight is the... You know, you're putting the whole lightweight division on hold, and then all of a sudden Nate Diaz comes in and gets a title shot. You know, you got to give that Ferguson, Kevin Lee. But I think if it's not Diaz, I think Kevin Lee is the next one to promote the fight.
Yeah, should he win? If Kevin Lee wins and he gets on the mic and starts ripping Connor, that's something that'll get Connor's attention for sure.
Oh, definitely.
And I think that's the fight to make. I think the winner of Lee and Ferguson against Connor would be the best fight that I would want to see in terms of what would make the most money and what makes the most business sense, probably the Diaz trilogy.
Ferguson can talk trash too, right? So whoever's going to win is going to have to step up to the plate and really start talking to hype that fight.
Ferguson's trash talk game isn't great, though.
No, it's not great. And that's and that's why Kevin Lee pretty much talked himself into it mm-hmm. because, again, he was making fun of him while he was trying to do the broadcasting aspect right after his fight.
Yep. Right.
So, again, the coulda, woulda, shouldas, the winner of the interim belt, you would assume, but it's one of those things where in today's era, just the fact that Connor fought in a boxing fight just shows why the UFC brass is wanting to do. It's they have $100 million a year in interest they have to take care of.
Right.
And if something can do, I think the last Diaz fight did $1.6 million, so if they can top that in a trilogy, they're going to go there.
Right, and if the rumors are true, you and I have heard the same thing. It was on Uriah Faber's Instagram. There was a video of Dana White saying that he had heard that it had done 6.5 million buys, which is 2 million more than Pacquiao Mayweather, which was an outrageous number to begin with.
100. Exactly. And at $100 a pop, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you got to think the illegal money. Streams as well. I was listening, and somewhere along the lines of over 100 million illegal streams as well. So you got to think that the eyes on that fight was just ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. It must have been crazy. If it's that many, plus you've got international buys, it had already broken the record for pay-per-view in the UK. So that was the money fight. It probably made more money than any other fight. When I had asked Floyd, we were in the scrums, and I asked him if this was going to be the first billion-dollar fight. He claimed that Pacquiao Mayweather was a billion-dollar fight, and I don't know if it was. I don't think it was.
The interesting thing is also the private aspect, because pay-per-view buys are usually shared, but when you have a secondary service like something like Fight Pass and what the UFC has, we won't really know what the number is. And again, because so many people were trying to buy it last minute, there were a lot of glitches, a lot of timeouts. So The actual number, maybe, let's say if it's 6.5 million, there might be half a million the people that get a refund, right? Just because of the way it kind of works out. So it'll be interesting to see what the final numbers are. But still, the fact that what was considered a circus fight was a very competitive fight, whether we have to kind of put aside the aspect of did Floyd allow it to. But again,
By
the numbers, it looked like he hit him more times in less rounds than Pacquiao did. Mm-hmm. And Floyd went up against someone with 50 times the experience in the one dimension that they were fighting and did not get embarrassed. I think it was more the case of fatigue. He could have, if hindsight's 20/20, just been able to defend more and possibly throw something, he wouldn't have gotten stopped.
Now, did you agree with that stoppage?
I agree in the sense that what this fight represents, it's a clash of two different heavyweights, juggernauts, mm-hmm. and let's save Conor because he is the UFC's prize pig right now. So, you know what? No need for him to get knocked out embarrassing. Let there be some type of controversy in some regards. And I think there was an idea of let's not let this go to the point of a full KO. Let's get him, you know, the technical aspect. And I think that was a perfect out because he didn't throw a punch in like a minute.
Yep.
And he was just all over the place. So I think mentally, he wasn't necessarily in the game anymore. So no point breaking your golden goose.
It might have actually gone too long. Like in boxing, if the same thing's happening and it's not Conor versus Floyd, that's fight stopped.
Yeah, I mean, there was no standing eight counts. He wasn't intelligently defending himself. And for me, I want to see Conor again, to see him go out. Who knows the types of the concussion and brain injuries that are going on. It's like, let him fight again. He's too exciting in combat sports to have him out and suffer from injuries like that. So I'm okay with that stoppage.
Same ways.
Do you think that it was a win for MMA and for Conor, like at least a moral victory for Conor? I know he won't count that as a victory. He wanted to win the fight.
Obviously, he wanted to win the fight. He wins again, Conor now has the biggest boxing pay-per-view draw and the biggest MMA pay-per-view draw. So that's a win in its own capacity. And, you know, he's going to walk away with anywhere between 70 to 100 million. It might be more with the amount of actual pay-per-views when the dust settles. So, you know, he's obviously, because he's a competitor through and through, and why he still wants to compete, even being the first. Again, he's the first UFC or MMA 100 millionaire. So there's another victory. And I think now at this point, it's not about necessarily the money anymore. It's about a legacy. And I keep on bringing it back to Jones and other greats that have been flagged for USADA and other type of things. I guess, again, when we're talking about legacy, he'll be the only one that, if he isn't cheating, it doesn't have a taint or an asterisk in regards to his legacy.
See, I'm still a boxing guy and a boxing fan. I'd still love to see him box again. I know there's that pre-fight trash with Paulie Malignaggi. I wouldn't mind seeing that. You get Paulie back in shape, it's more of an even fight. I still think like a Triple G or a Canelo are still too high for McGregor, but hey, I would still love to see him in the boxing ring as a combat sports fan.
Don't tempt the MMA gods on that one. That's like the last thing I want to see is Conor box again.
But the problem is he's not going to get these fights in UFC that are going to give him that magnitude of a fight. There's not many superstars. They can't get the views, the pay-per-views as much. But
Conor versus Malignaggi, I don't think is that big of a draw.
It's not trash talking, but it'll still sell. It's not as big, but I still think it would be fun.
Paulie's getting on every media source now trying to get that fight, which makes sense for him. It would be probably his biggest fight ever.
Exactly right. And I still say it does a couple million just because, right?
Oh, it would do a couple million.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think anything Conor does from here on out is going to do a couple million. I think this elevated his profile so that when he fights again in the UFC, listen, people aren't walking away from that fight saying this guy's a joke. You'll hear that from some boxing purists, but they all know what would happen if that fight was in the octagon with Floyd and Conor.
Wouldn't go out of first
round. Started.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the MMA community kind of has that chip on their shoulder where if people from the boxing world say, oh, well, your guy didn't look very good. It was like, well, they went 10 and a half rounds, pal. Or was it nine and a half rounds?
Yeah.
So I think that that's pretty much all you got to say about that to a boxing fan. But nobody is going to come out of this thinking Conor is smaller than he was. He's bigger. He stepped into a completely different atmosphere and looked really good.
He has 18.5 million followers on Instagram. That, again, the engagement rate, he beat Floyd in the engagement rate and just in the overall you know, impression in regards to the internet and what he did. But again, that could have been more Floyd's strategy to have the questioning. Hey, is he training? Hey, is he just spending all his time at the strip clubs and whatnot? And Ariel proved that he is showing up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
He tweeted it. Yeah. Yeah, he said he was going to go every night leading up to the fight.
Yep. He said he wasn't even sparring the month before.
Right. Yeah.
But that to that point, it's again, Floyd is someone that has been doing boxing almost even professionally, but even just amateur in his training career longer than Conor's been on this earth.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
which
he's
is crazy.
He started amateur boxing when he was a kid too. You got to take into his count his over 100 boxing amateur fights as well.
Yeah, and then his parents, his father, he was almost born into boxing royalty. His father was a great boxer, his uncle as well.
Yeah,
so it's a huge opportunity to basically just, like, he is boxing, and especially in our generation.
Conor, zero fights. Like, zero amateur, zero professional boxing fights, and he looked really good.
Yeah.
I think that's what we have to take away from it. Is he,
absolutely.
He will not walk away from this looking bad, no matter what. You know, after what we saw, everybody's going to walk away from the saying, you know, happy. I think the boxing world is happy because their guy won. The MMA world's happy because their guy hung with him. The UFC's happy because they got some money. Conor's happy because he got some money. Floyd's happy because he got a lot of money. And everybody's happy. It was an exciting fight. The fans are happy, too.
Yeah. How was your experience there, Aaron? I know you were there live.
It was really cool. It was cool. You know, I haven't really gone to any boxing matches in the past. It was interesting to me how little the main card meant up until the main event.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Just as someone who covers the UFC, nobody cared. It was a quarter full when the main card started.
Davis, the last four fights,
a quarter full, if that. And I was shocked. I was looking around like, it's a ghost town. People were paying $3,500. They're not showing up till, you know, till 7 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Pacific time. I couldn't believe it.
And that's
these are high-level boxers.
And I think that's where the difference between, positives, what it emphasizes, rather, what UFC is doing so well. Because someone in the beginning of the main card or even earlier can be that name. And again, it goes back to why Dana White doesn't allow the amount of, or is hesitant at least, to have so many weight classes. Because what the UFC is really good at doing is marketing. Even if you're not a champion, you are a star. And even when you do lose in boxing, it's a lot different. If you lose a couple of fights, you're gone in many ways. But in the UFC, you win a couple, lose a couple. If they're exciting and you have a fan following, you're in it for a whole career.
Because even when you watch a boxing card, you only really know the main event. If you're a casual boxing fan, I have no idea. Even me, who watches boxing, I barely know any of the guys on the undercard. Where on a UFC card, the main card, even the head of the prelims, you got good names, exciting fights. So it's a sport that you can build up more. Where boxing, like, you have that one fight, and it's such a long 12-round fight. So, I love the UFC model.
And I will say, just leading up to the match, it was interesting to see the different things that Dana has kind of cherry-picked from boxing to and brought it to the UFC and made it better. You know, I think that the press conference format that the UFC does is way better. I do think the one thing I really liked actually about boxing was the long walkouts at the weigh-ins for the main event guys. I mean, everybody had the long walkouts, but I think the UFC should lift that too. Have like a good 1 or 2 minute walkout, builds the suspense.
Yeah.
That I thought was really cool.
Let's hope they don't bring those Corona girls over. Did you see how awkward they were looking in the backgrounds? What? Oh my God.
They were towering over Floyd at the end.
And they were just sitting there awkwardly smiling the whole time.
Yeah. They didn't show that Floyd was a level below them when they shot it. So it looked like these girls were like 6'10".
I couldn't even look at the guys anymore, just to the point I was staring at the girls just awkwardly smiling for an hour straight.
They did the same thing in the weigh-ins as well.
Oh yeah, nonstop post-fight conference. Yep. Yeah. Oh, it was crazy.
I was just going to say,
did you guys hear about the belt? What the belt was made out of?
Yeah.
I just saw some stats, which was crazy.
Alligator skin and like
$1.2 million belt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's
worth a little less.
Yes, exactly. Even your Gucci one.
Yes.
But in a fight that was purely essentially on excess, because like one of the things that going into this, I kind of said that Mayweather fans in many ways were Fairweather fans, because what they were trying to follow him and why they followed him was the classic aspect of the transition from pretty boy to money. It was just his lifestyle people are following. They weren't necessarily as you know, as invested as Connor's fans, even though Connor in many ways is, you know, cherry picking what Floyd did. He is essentially just taking that script and flipping it in regards to his way. But I think just like we saw in Toronto in the press conference, and just like I saw at Boston Pizza and John and Front. What's it called? Mixed martial arts fans are much more invested in regards to the fighters. And I think that has a lot to do with the aspect of it coming from a niche market and eventually becoming the mainstream thing that it is.
And by the end of it, it did feel like Connor was the A-side. People were more interested in Connor than Floyd. People were, if you looked even at the weigh-in stats on YouTube, 300,000 people watched live on the UFC's YouTube and 50,000 people watched on Showtime's YouTube.
Yeah, 100%.
That's not a coincidence.
And part of that is also the fact that Floyd has said that he's retiring. So I think everyone's also wondering what's
Floyd
next.
Floyd said he was retiring against Berto, and nobody watched that fight.
Exactly. That's also true.
But even nobody Floyd knew he needed Connor to build these pay-per-view sales, right?
And it was brilliant of him. He picked the perfect foil. It was a guy that he wouldn't need to work that hard to beat because of his innate boxing skills that he's learned all his life. As you mentioned, he was boxing before McGregor was on this earth. It was just a perfect business decision for both of these guys. And once the UFC bought in and they got their piece of the pie, again, everybody walked away happy. And it was great to see a Mayweather fight that was actually enjoyable. If you've watched Mayweather Berto and Mayweather Pacquiao, they're just not exciting fights.
What do you think this does for up-and-coming athletes? Do you think a lot of guys are overshooting now, trying to be that overconfident?
I think people need to be
to sell themselves.
People need to be realistic. I mean, Connor is an anomaly. He's a guy that built himself by being himself. You know, there are only a handful of UFC fighters that I think have been able to build that kind of stardom just by being themselves. Ronda was one example. Chael, I think, is a great example because if you took Chael's career and put it on a guy that didn't talk, he'd be a journeyman. Like he'd be alternating between main card and prelims. He was able to build a huge career because of how charismatic he was and how good of a promoter he was. And then you look at Chuck Liddell, just an exciting guy, exciting style of fighting.
But who does the UFC have now to build that star power outside of Connor?
I don't know if that's for the UFC to decide. That's for the fans to decide. I think that the idea of the UFC promoting people and making them big is a very limited viewpoint. I think that the fighters that will be the best, like Kevin Lee, who we spoke to last week, he's got that it factor. Where if people buy in and he's able to take the mic and say and talk the way that he talks, he'll become a star.
For sure.
But if the UFC can promote everybody, they can promote Demetrius Johnson until the cows come home and show highlight reels of him during football games. The fans need to feel something. It's how a fighter will make a fan feel that will make them into a star.
Which is outside of the ring most of the time,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And again, it also comes down to the fact that and why someone like Vince McMahon didn't buy the UFC, it's the rumor or whatever, because you can't necessarily invest in the stars if they're not winning. So that's also the big variable.
Yeah, you can't put people over, like in wrestling. Yeah. You can't just build guys up because, you know. So
I think Floyd said the same thing, because on his undercard he had that Gervonta Davis, and he said he's going to be the next big star and everything, right. But he missed weight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wasn't promoting and selling himself outside of the fight, so he said you can't have a star without having the in and the out of the ring.
And he was also against the guy that was not, it wasn't a competitive fight. Like,
exactly.
He was a 40-1 favorite in that fight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if he loses that fight, his career is pretty much done. But you can't really build your brand by beating guys that you're supposed to beat.
Exactly. But that's what boxing is, right?
Yeah.
Building records.
Yeah, padding records, And you don't see that in the UFC. And I think that's why people get confused. They look at Conor's records. Oh, he's lost fights. He's not undefeated. It's like, well, this isn't boxing. You know,
so many more ways to lose in mixed martial arts.
So many more ways.
Which I think
so
martial arts, kickboxing included with MMA, they do need to build their athletes a little bit more because you're getting these young guys getting blown out by these big names early on in their career.
Right.
It's discouraging. So I think a little bit of a buildup is good, but not the way boxing does it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at Yair Rodriguez getting thrown in against Edgar, like he was just completely overmatched in that fight.
100%.
But he had earned his way into that spot, though. So... But that being said, he didn't really beat guys that would elevate you that high. He wasn't really tested to the level of a Frankie Edgar before.
It could be the lack of talent as well, right? With not as many athletes in your division, you have less of a chance to build yourself.
Right.
That's also true. And again, styles make fights. And it could be just the case of, you know, you could have zigged when you could have zagged in regards to your decision choice and who you're fighting.
Yeah, and I mean, you're coming off a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that you're any less of a star than you were before that last fight. Because you're always interacting with people on Twitter. Your brand is important to you. You think outside the box in a way that a lot of different people in the UFC don't think about. You think about the business aspect and the fight aspect of your career. And a lot of people are hyper-focused on the fight aspect.
Yeah, no, but again, I'm a little reluctant to kind of... That works for me. It's just like the conversation that you're saying where Kevin Lee and McGregor. I'm looking at more on the 10-point plan. I'm at the point where I make more money outside of fighting than I do inside of fighting. And I've been able to basically use my degree in advertising to develop the brand that is myself. So whether it's, we joked about the hair, but I'm now the North American brand ambassador for Per Plus. Mm-hmm. I just assigned...
I wasn't joking about the hair.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we all know the original 2-in-1 helped. But and also now recently, not tuning my horns, but I'm also the face of Rock'em Sock'em Robot. I'm a brand ambassador for
really?
Mattel globally.
Awesome.
So there's other projects, and now Boston Pizza is one of them, where every single event I'll be doing at Boston Pizza, John in front... To clarify, and again, I'm going to be doing celebrity bartending because I had a background in bartending, and I have a bunch of other projects outside. I think I'm a little different because, I have a degree in advertising that I understand that component, and I'm not necessarily the brash individual like someone like Conor McGregor or Kevin Lee. I'm a lover, but everyone's got a price, and what I'm trying to do is build that platform for after athletics, and whether it's the two leads in movies that I'm working on, or the TV show that I'm also the producer of, again, it's not just what I'm doing in the cage, but out, and I'm doing it in my own way.
How do you think more fighters can start thinking like that, or pursue that avenue?
Well, there's certain, again, it's as simple as having a whiteboard and understanding the brand that is yourself. What is it that makes you you? And again, there's certain products and certain companies and certain brands that you can attach yourself with. And I think one of the big things that I noticed and decided on very early was not MMA stuff. I want to get outside sphere sponsors and endorsements. And again, I think I have now the two largest brand endorsements in all of mixed martial arts, whether it's and someone mentioned Budweiser. Yes, but that's in the sphere with Cerrone. That's in the sphere of mixed martial arts.
It's also a sponsor, an MMA sponsor.
Exactly, it's an MMA sponsor, UFC specific as well. I now have Per Plus and also Mattel, which is the 200th largest company in the world. And
right.
And part of that was as simple as doing it was funny because I have like monthly meetings with Pert. And their subsidiary. And what ends up happening is they were a little concerned because I did when Barbie came out with the new Man Bun Ken. I just basically superimposed mine. And funny enough, the PR firm or one of the people from the PR firm from Mattel saw that, loved it, and they reached out to me and said, "We love it. We love your attitude. We love your sense of humor. We'd love for you to be a part of the new reboot of Rock'em Sock'em Robot." So, and the amazing thing is I developed a whole campaign with that, and they basically send it back to their head office because I was dealing with Mattel Canada. And the U.S., the world Mattel company saw that, loved it, and not only am I going to be the face of Rock'em Sock'em Robot, but they also said Barbie might be next.
Really?
So,
wow.
So, again.
An Elias Barbie doll.
Yeah, well, they already have Man Bun Ken, so we're just going to have to change his name to Elias.
Yeah, but he could be his, like, brooding friend.
Exactly, just,
his brutish buddy.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, do you ever have fighters call you to pick your brain about how they can become a little bit more engaged?
Yeah, no, I'm actually doing kind of like workshops at TriStar in the next little bit. So I'm going to be showing them just the simple aspects in regards to Photoshop. And there's an opportunity to show a bigger return of investment to any person that you're actually asking for sponsorship. And again, what I try to explain to all the guys that are, you know, amateur or pro and, you know, kind of in that in between, you got to hit the local sponsors because, like, for instance, one of my First Sponsors is also my longest sponsors. Tribeca Finance Corporation, the largest secondary lender in all of Toronto. It's a large company. And again, it was one of those things where it was a rapport that I had with the president and CEO, and it became a friendship, and it has blossomed into an endorsement and a believing in one each other. And again, what I've been successful, because they saw me for one of the things that they deal with, secondary lending, and the way it kind of works is, you know, if your bank doesn't approve you, they believe in you. And that was the kind of long-term pitch that we're now working on, where it's like, again, they sponsored me before I was in the UFC. Tribeca picks winners. They believe in people before other people do.
Wow. It's unbelievable. It's great to see that kind of craftsmanship, I guess, outside of the octagon. And inside of the octagon, you've got a fight coming up. You can't talk about it just yet. But that's very exciting news.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And again, mixed martial arts is my passion. And obviously, even with this outside focus in some aspect, I still have the focus of being the best I can be inside the octagon. And the last fight, I still beat my opponent, 2-1 in striking, 3-1 in takedowns, in control time, I think a minute and a half longer. So, again, the only people that he lost to were the two gentlemen fighting for the title in the next day's event.
Oh, wow.
So it's one of those things where I've never been knocked out, and I've lost two close fights that kind of emphasize the idea that, you know, the old adage, never leave it in the hands of the judges. So that's what I got to make sure I don't do next fight.
I just think it's impressive how you came into MMA with barely any experience, right?
Yeah.
From my understanding, right? You never had a traditional martial arts background growing up, and you just kind of went into the pro ranks and took off with it.
Yeah, no.
And you're still learning after every fight, right?
That's exactly it. Whether I win or lose, I'm still going back to the drawing board. I didn't start mixed martial arts in any capacity until about 20. And after my first year of university, I was enlightening the mind that the body should follow. And it's been about 8-9 years since. And yeah, that's the only capacity. It was a complete blank canvas. I didn't do anything. I just did some kickboxing when I first started, and some jiu-jitsu, and then I added some wrestling, and here we are today.
Wow. Yeah. Honestly, it's an incredible journey, and it's great to see you continue to take it to high levels with, again, both inside and outside the octagon.
Appreciate it.
John Jones, let's get to this topic, because this is a topic that can turn the UFC completely on its head. John Jones flagged for a potential doping violation by USADA last week, which likely means,
so sad,
even if it ends up being a tainted supplement, which it looks like that's going to be the defense that they use, Daniel Cormier is likely going to be the champion again, because it would be a no contest, correct?
Yeah.
Or if it ends up being...
They're going to overturn it regardless.
Yeah, but it could be a loss, right, if it ends up being a steroid, correct?
Yep.
This is the part about it that really bothers me. And I'm actually going to take it from the fighter's perspective. Why is TMZ the first to report this?
They have a deal with the UFC.
I get
really?
That.
I didn't know
no,
that.
No, I get that. But why is TMZ the first to report this? Like, that's, you're basically putting the failure of one of your athletes as a big story on a big platform for everybody to see. And it didn't have that. It had a lot of information that wasn't really factual. Like, to me, it seems like they don't have John's back. And I mean, I know that they can't, they don't necessarily have anybody's back when it comes to USADA, but John is one of their top draws. And to me, it seems like, you know, you kind of hung him out to dry by having TMZ be the source to break that story instead of UFC.com putting out a release and kind of taking a step back.
But again, how many times have we been in this dance? Yeah, but he's failed three different versions.
Well, there was the thing with cocaine, which wasn't his fault. That shouldn't have.
No, and
really
he could have
reported.
Sued. He could have actually sued because again, USADA and everyone else doesn't test for recreational drugs. Yeah. Because, for instance, cocaine, which is the extreme version, but I would say like a joint you smoke a month before has no effect during the game day, and they're very progressive in regards to that take.
Understanding of that. Yep. Which is
but cool. Again, that is considered probably a conduct kind of in the eyes of the people. That's kind of a misconduct type thing.
And especially that it was only it was three weeks before his fight, his biggest fight at the time against DC.
Yeah.
So again, what?
Actually, sorry, that would be four then, because you've got that. You've got the DUI years ago.
And the penis pills. Wasn't that another one?
Well, yes, that's part of it too. But that was, I guess, the most recent one. But then there was also the hit and run.
But two of them, again, weren't actual failings. They were more conduct, again, in the same sphere as conduct. Yes. He was stripped for the fact that they didn't know if he was going to jail.
Right. So in terms of USADA, this is number two.
This is number two.
But if you're a repeat offender, that can be an up to 4-year suspension.
And more importantly, the last one that we joked about the penis pills,
yeah.
That was smoke. Now there's fire. And this one, and I've talked to a couple of my coaches where why this, and again, we can go in the defense that they're talking about, well, why would he do it? We knew we had that because this one only had a certain half-life. And if they've already been tested for two times before that, he assumes that they're not going to test them in the capacity that they were testing him before.
I don't know, though, because this was a post-weigh-in test.
Yeah,
I mean, typically, don't athletes always get tested after weigh-ins?
No, it's usually after the fight. Again, it's basically about really what it comes down to is what information and who's giving it to you. If they're saying, "Don't worry, this is you're not going to get caught."
Yeah, it has a 24-hour oral turanabol, I believe, which is what they're saying. Yeah, they're saying that's what he tested positive for.
But again, potentially, the more important thing is last time there was smoke, now there's actual fire. And whether. I did believe him in the sense of the anti-estrogen blockers because the fact that he's a little bit of a freak. He's a person that is the reason why he is so good is because he needs that adrenaline, whether it's drinking cocaine, being the best fighter in the world, drinking and driving, endless amounts of women, blah 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 blah. And again, coming back,
Elias, he's engaged, man. Let's take a step back.
Easy. Yeah, even though what he ran and came back for with that hit, with that what he came back for with the
for the car?
For the car was condoms. Condoms in his pipe.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean,
safety first.
Yeah,
safety first.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems to me that would be a very risky thing to do that close to a fight.
But,
and that the positive impact of taking that drug probably wouldn't show up right away, correct?
But the positive is that drug specifically, and the reason why that one's taken, it goes back to Balco. Why he was successful is because they were microdosing and they were doing drugs that the USADA was like, well, no one would do this drug because it's from the 50s. There's so much better stuff out there. It's toxic. But then that's where the whole idea of microdosing comes. And again, what this drug specifically does is pumps you up. It's like, for lack of a better word, it is a pre-workout on steroids. So it's
good because it's a performance without getting the mass building effects, right? Which is why Turanabol is so good for MMA athletes. But apparently recently they never had tests to detect it, but now they have like the...
Well, it was more that they weren't testing regularly enough because it's out of your system, I believe, in 24 hours.
But they say like it's very hard to get. So you get it in the black market and that's usually when the half-life of it gets affected and that's when guys are testing positive for it.
Yeah. And now they think that... what I've heard, rather, is that they have a longer... Like you said, they can find it for longer. It's now weeks rather than hours.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, one thing I did read was that it's a drug that is commonly found in tainted supplements or turanabol. It was an article that I read from an anti-doping specialist that came out before the Rio Olympics that oral turanabol, as well as meldonium, which is a drug that was used by a lot of the Russian athletes, is a drug that has been found in a lot of different tainted supplements. Now, that being said, for the California State Athletic Commission, you need to sign, by penalty of perjury, a list of every supplement that you've taken during your camp when you're signing your paperwork. So that could be a problem.
Due diligence. The more important thing is due diligence. I have, and that's the bigger issue with the states. The states is the Wild West because it doesn't fall under the Food Drug Administration, so it's not in the FDA. So it falls under this class of... I can't remember the technical term, but essentially they don't get tested in the same scrutiny as medicine does. Where in Canada, it's a lot different. So again, because that's where the whole proprietary blend comes in. Where it's like, well, 30% might be a little bit of this and a little bit of that, right? You don't really know what it is. And we've all heard horror stories. One of my favorite examples is an elderly multivitamin for 50 and plus, people that were taking it were starting turning yellow and they didn't understand. But the same company that was doing a legitimate vitamin beforehand. They were doing steroids and other kind of stuff, and they didn't wash the actual machines properly, and all these people were turning yellow because they were having jaundice from their liver just failing.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's the States.
I don't feel bad for John Jones at this point. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I think that it's I love watching John Jones fight. So as a fan, if I were a fan watching the fights, I would want to see John Jones. And John Jones just came off a very exciting fight against Cormier. And from a business perspective, the UFC probably wants to see John Jones. But I mean, again, the amount of stuff on this guy's rap sheet now is lengthy. It's tough to get behind someone when you see all of these different things continuously happen. I mean, we had the OSP fight last year. Nothing happened around that. But
he looked
like
terrible at that one, too, right?
But that's the only time frame that you can really remember of the last 4 or 5 years where there hasn't been any sort of crazy stuff surrounding him.
He's already lost 3 years of his career from suspension. And this might be potentially
there's no way
four.
He's gonna
so is this
like,
the end of John Jones?
I think there's opportunities for him to get really good in jiu-jitsu and do competitions there. Yeah. And if he fights,
I think it's the end of him ever being considered the best to ever do it. And I think that, you know, if you would have asked me last Monday who the best to ever do it was, I probably would have said John Jones. Like, if you look at his resume and how dominant he's been and how he doesn't really have a legitimate loss, no disrespect to Matt Hamill, he was the guy that I thought just had the best resume of everybody.
And with the 3 years of suspension.
With the three years of suspension. Yeah.
Again, and also the fact that if you just scratch the surface, you can look that his brother got busted for the same estrogen blocker who's in the NFL. He probably got it allegedly from somewhere in that capacity.
For sure.
And again, it's not like his brother failed for the same dick pill. And him and his brother that got busted for it, they are the less athletic brother. If you look at the Chandler. He's the more athletic brother. You could say, okay, if he started eating his diet, like having a better diet, and he was jacked, I've always made fun of.
He had some problems of his own in the pros, but yes, nothing illegal.
Exactly. Well, that was
marijuana.
That was synthesized marijuana, which is essentially bath salts, which is crazy.
Yeah.
but he had an allergic reaction to it. But the point being is, I always make fun of, but also also praise Vitor Belfort, or as I like to call him, TR Titor, for being the best fighter ever created. And there's a cool before and after kind of thing where you can see him just fully 200 pounds getting ready for John Jones when he was cheating like a mofo. And then afterwards, he looks like a 50-year-old surfer.
We saw that with Overeem as well, right?
Jones, you can look at, it's the opposite. You can see him where, you can pull it up on Google, where it's him kind of like smirking with his hands on his hips, and he looks like a skinny, lanky dude who's not really that athletic. And then you look at the other one when he was, you know, swollen in his suspension and lifting those weights. You can't really do that. You have to be already in some capacity in that shape, right? Again, like for myself, if I let myself go after a fight for a couple months, I'm going to have some extra inflammation because, you know, a couple beers, a couple meals at late times, whatever. But I can get back into shape. He was always that lanky, tall individual.
Right.
And again, part of it was him growing up, you know, and he's becoming in the frame that he was. But, you know, the other aspect, the reason why he became so big and probably when he actually started using it, allegedly, was when he was in the suspension. Because when you're suspended, you don't get tested.
Yeah, that's
why
true.
Why not?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I think the big downside for this is, for the UFC at least, is that they're going to lose a potential $2+ million buy pay-per-view with him and Lesnar, which was probably the only one available to them outside of Connor. So
we can give DC that now. I wouldn't mind DC.
Cormier? Yeah, DC Lesnar would be fun. I'd watch that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you got to give him credit now. Does that put DC up on the pound-for-pound list?
Yeah,
now?
Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely.
But
because that's, if you look at that as a no contest, what's his resume? Still, he's beaten Gustafson. He's beaten all the best of the best guys.
It's got to suck for DC, though.
It does, though, because people are not going to look at it the same.
Even in his heart and his soul, like, he wants to win in the, you know, in the cage. He doesn't want to have to win by, you know,
public opinion.
Public opinion. Yeah. And so, I mean, it still sucks for the guy who's given his sport the sport, everything he's got, right?
Yeah, well, before we wrap, I did want to talk about UFC Rotterdam this weekend. Just the main event, Stefan Struve, Alexander Volkov, two of the biggest guys in the UFC in terms of height. I think they are. They might be the two biggest because Volkov's like 6'7". I don't know how tall Travis Brown is, but he's in the mix there.
Yep.
But and Struve is 7 feet tall. Yeah. Apparently, Struve, from what I understand, is since he's been working with Henry Hooft, has been really working on creating distance and using his length to his advantage. People have been saying this for years, but how do you guys see this one playing out?
I like Struve for this one, to be honest with you. I think he's got a little bit more pop and power to him. Watching Volkov, he's a little bit more of a technical, not as much power hitting. I give the advantage to Struve. I think he just has a little bit more pop, and I think he'll finish him on the feet, to be honest with you.
No pun intended. It really depends if Struve has heart for this fight.
No, there was pun intended.
Yeah.
I think there was pun intended.
Yes, there was. There definitely was. The point, again, with him is whether he's actually wants to be there. And again, there's the obvious health issues, but with they've been cleared, and also psychological aspects of it, rather, in the sense of whether he wants to be there. He's going to be fighting another tough individual who is almost as tall, almost as long, just going back to Jones and where he kind of fits in this, Jones still has longer reach than Struve.
Yep, he still does. Yeah,
he does.
Struve has T-Rex arms, unfortunately, for a guy that tall.
Yeah.
Volkov's got a long reach, though.
Yep. So, again, it's a tough fight. But I think more importantly in regards to that one, one of the things I would throw out there, Germandermy, who's not fighting on that. She's pulling
out.
So those are two huge kind of blows to her. One, vacating the 145 female belt, and then now pulling out
in her
hometown.
Against Renault.
Yeah.
Well, Struve's got to be up to fight anyways because it's in it's in Amsterdam. Not Amsterdam, in Rotterdam, but still in Holland where he's born and does most of his training, right?
Yeah. And there was a late notice opponent for Zabit Magomedsharipov, the super prospect. So I'm interested to see how he looks this weekend. And Darren Till, I think, is a guy that's really on the rise.
Very true.
He's looked very good. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You can watch that fight. I believe, I don't know if it's Fight Pass exclusive or not.
I think it is.
I think it's just on Fight Pass, which means it'll be on Fight Network in Canada. Elias, I want to thank you for joining us in studio. Fun
My
show.
Pleasure.
Looking forward to watching Rotterdam. And then, of course, next week, the UFC's in Edmonton, leading up to UFC 215, which should be a good card. I'm really upset that Ngannou and JDS isn't happening. I spoke to Ngannou last week, actually, in Vegas. I interviewed him. And he really wants that title shot. And to me, I think that's the fight to make. I just don't see who else is out there right now for Stipe. I know Stipe is having contractual disagreements right now, but I think that Ngannou versus Stipe is the best heavyweight fight you can make right now.
I think so, in just regards to the momentum, 5-0, and what you got left. He's the only one that's a fresh face.
Well, he says Overeem's injured. Ngannou says Overeem's injured.
Injured.
And then, of course, Kane, we don't know what's going on with him. It seems like he's not
perpetual.
Ready. Not ready for action anytime soon.
I actually saw Stipe on the weekend. He came to the Glory event.
Oh, cool.
He was enjoying the kickboxing. He was there. So it's cool. We never got to talk about his fight, but cool guy. Just happy he's a fan of kickboxing as well.
He's the friendliest guy. He's
super
such
nice.
A nice guy.
Sweetheart.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Elias. Joe, awesome show as always.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
And when I say as always, this is our second show, so we really knocked this one out of the park.
Yeah. Starting strong.
Keep the momentum going. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.